This is Pure Decking number, geez, what are we up to now, 11?
11, yep.
Yep. And tonight I have Heavy Metal and Nox. Hey, guys.
I've returned to Tuesday.
Hey, awesome.
Yeah, it is Tuesday, I think.
Yeah. Still Tuesday.
Sure. Well, you know, when
unlike last Tuesday, which is on the site as Thursday.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, you know, I spend all my time in a lab. I never actually see the sun. So, you know, when they maintain, you know, a constant, you know, brightness of noon all day long, it gets kind of hard to tell time. So, anyways, that said, I figure we might as well open up with the most important thing that we've gotten today. Sony. And this just happened today. Sony was kind enough to tell us what all the people who got into PlayStation, and this is why they shut down PlayStation Live, is because they said somebody got into it and they weren't sure how bad. Well, they've said now how bad. Basically the hackers got everything. Your PSN.
All the way.
Oh yeah, yeah. Your PSN, your password, your credit card number, name, address, phone number, the whole kit and caboodle.
Well, I mean, that's cool.
No, it's not. But
they're not sure about the credit cards yet.
Yeah, you know what? I would just err on the side of caution and cancel everything out and just start again. It seems to be my mantra lately. If you're not sure, just cancel it out and start with a new one.
That's right.
No, but, you know, this is one of those things where one of my pro tips, and I know how well that went last time, but the pro tip is you keep a separate card for your online transactions, and you keep your main banking card only for when you're doing point-of-sale stuff. That way you can track what's going on with your online stuff, and you only keep a certain amount of funds in your online, you know, basically what you need to pay your monthly subscription fees.
Well, you really need more than one, because
yeah.
If you've only got the one card and, like, PlayStation gets popped, think of all the online services, especially if you do a lot of online gaming, that have access to your credit card. Like, if you happen to, say, try a lot of MMOs, you think they get rid of your billing data just because you tell them to delete it?
Do you guys know if PayPal still has those one-shot...
I think they ditched them.
Yeah, I think they did that because of untrackability. Basically, people were able to buy crap, and it wasn't traceable, and the feds weren't probably happy with that.
Yeah, they couldn't. Well, PayPal has done a lot lately to appease the government, as it were, because they, I think they got reamed, basically.
Yeah, but that was nice, because then you could go through and encrypt. I mean, you know, and obviously that's what it was. It was untrackable and one-time payments and other banks that like to reach in and grab some money from you at times didn't like the fact that they were limited on what you could do with it. So
it took something they traditionally had, which is, you know, in the modern credit society, the companies have always been the ones in control, not the consumers. Now We can go on and on about that, and then we would get into politics and God knows what else, and I don't really want
to
go
there. So back to the PlayStation 3 stuff, clearly they were not – they had some kind of exploit that they were not aware of and they had, were aware of and hadn't taken care of.
You would think a company the size of Sony could afford to hire a couple of security consultants to maybe come in and take a look at their multi-billion dollar network. You know, if they finally do come out and say, yeah – yeah, they got your credit card numbers, which right now that's just a possibility. And I'm willing to bet they got their credit card numbers, no matter what Sony says. Because at some point, the legal ninjas are going to jump in here and say, no, we cannot confirm they got the credit card numbers. Because, well, they're going to get the pants sued off of them.
Oh, that's going to happen regardless. I mean, people are going to do it just to get the information about whether or not they lost the credit card numbers. So I expect class action to happen pretty soon.
I fully expect a class action here, just because this is huge. Do you know how many credit card numbers? Let's just assume they got them. Do you know what that means? It's not just you know, attackers may have gotten your credit card numbers and can start running up crap. Everyone who had an account with a PlayStation 3, which is a lot of people, and who had a Sony Live account that they put a credit card on. All of
the important other information that can you use to basically ID theft is all there. So yeah.
Your ID theft is there. So one, Sony's going to have to put out the to the credit watch services, hey, we need you to put out anti-fraud and all these things, which they never want to do. You know, those credit, we've talked about that before, the credit card services never want to put out the anti-fraud stuff because they lose money. They can't sell as many cards when that's going on. But two, and this is the big one, think of the number of cards that are going to have to be reissued. That's going to be huge cost to banks. That's going to be a huge cost to creditors, you know, Visa and MasterCard. And of course, we could go into PCI, but you guys probably don't actually know what I'm talking about with regards to credit card PCI. Basically, the big credit card companies put security on the clients of the credit card system, and the credit card system itself is actually horribly broken. So,
but chip and PIN, which is the European method, has been hacked a couple times pretty good recently, so that's not safe either.
Well, the problem is Visa, MasterCard, Amex, they have this PCI compliance, which is something businesses do to so that they can run credit cards, and it basically puts all of the responsibility for security not on the credit card network, but on the endpoints, the businesses that that process your card. And in fact, when you do credit card theft, like if you're a carder and you're using somebody else's card online, and that person, of course, is going to go, hey, those aren't my charges, I'm not paying for that. What'll end up happening is who they call their bank is going to do a back charge, and the person who actually ends up taking the loss is the vendor, not the credit card company.
Right.
So when you do carding, you're not stealing from the rich jerk whose credit card you managed to get, or the evil credit card companies. You're actually stealing from the places you're buying stuff from.
Exactly.
So just keep that in mind.
Or at least the people too stupid to check their bills.
Well,
yeah. But here's the thing: you have to keep in mind that there are a lot of strip malls, and they don't have any kind of real security there. I think one of our local strip malls had like one store with a Micker checker, which is a magnetic strip on checks, and so basically everyone except for that one shoe store had to stop accepting personal checks because they couldn't run the checks through.
Well, they don't want to accept personal checks anymore anyways. They want to do the card because that way they get their money immediately.
Right, and that it's
cheaper.
Yep, it's cheaper and it's
convenient.
I want to get into the infrastructure.
Your tax fight.
The horrible infrastructure for credit cards and debit cards as it stands. You've got this kludge of outdated systems, so you're going to occasionally get these things that will post like 2 weeks later on your card. It's like, well, I made the transaction, and then 2 weeks later it will give you the original transaction date, and then it'll say, well, now it's clear 2 weeks later.
Oh, yeah. Gas station pumps are the worst for that. They'll take $50 to $100 out of your account, depending on whatever the price of gas is. And I'm not even going to go into that. But they'll take out, you know, a good chunk of your bank account and then hold it until the actual amount clears. So you might only get $30 worth of gas, but they're taking $50 out of your account, and then they put it back, you know, a week later when it clears. And then when you call the gas station and say, hey, what are you doing? And they say, oh, that's your bank. When it's not, but that's what they say to get people off the phone.
Yeah. So,
pretty screwy.
Debit actually takes the actual amount right off. So if you're going to go and run your debit card, you add the debit card certain pumps.
Yeah, but every bank charges to do debit.
But they don't charge it to you. They charge it to the point of sale. I don't get any fees through my bank.
Depending on if you have a free checking or not.
Yeah, my bank, and it's not a free checking account. Believe me, I have a good checking account. How about that?
Okay.
Because I, same bank I got my mortgage through, so they, you know, they automatically up you to a gold standard or whatever the hell. I don't remember the details. But if I use my debit card in a store, I pay a $2 fee. So I always run it as credit, just because I can't. You know, I can't, for as much as I use my card, I can't afford $2 every time I run it. So,
no, I agree, and that's my point is, we have the technology to instantly post every transaction, and we don't do it. And that's so we're kind of off the point of the PlayStation 2 getting hacked. But this is what it comes down to: is there's not enough good security in our financial transactions. Probably no encryption, especially not on those endpoints that are going over dial-up.
But you got to think they designed the thing. When did they actually design the credit card system? It was in the 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah, and, it was originally, they were using the old knuckle busters and carbon paper.
Yeah,
and
then,
you can still use those, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they have to. But the credit card system was always designed to support the lowest common denominator, and I don't think they ever considered that consumers were going to have access to the kind of hardware, network connectivity. Hell, you can go online and buy a card reader now for like $30.
Yeah. And get all of the data that's on your card and pretty much duplicate it anyway.
How can you go on eBay and get the thing to clone it for $100?
Yeah.
Oh, heck, you can put credit cards directly onto your phone now.
That's true.
That's a whole nother can of worms. Speaking of phones.
excellent.
Let's go back into, we mentioned it last week. We didn't talk about it a whole much. But, you know, there's Knox with the save on the segue there for us.
Yep.
Let's talk about the iPhone tracking stuff, because that's we mentioned it Thursday. We kind of were like, yeah, well, I guess so. And I did run the program. It does work, the little program they put out. It also deliberately fuzzes your results so that if somebody doesn't know how to go into code and take out some of the fuzzing, it's not as accurate as you would like.
Right.
Okay.
Have you gone through and done some encryption on your backup on your PC or
Yeah. Well, actually, my iTunes is on a machine that really doesn't do anything else at the moment, and it's actually not even on most of the time. So yeah, I need to turn on the encrypted backup, and I'm going to, but I've got to move my iTunes to a different machine anyways because that one's getting formatted.
Okay.
So when I'll sit down and do all that at once.
That'll be good. And that's the big thing. How are you going to get the average consumer of an iProduct to go through and encrypt, you know, their data, basically?
Well, the short answer is you're not. But it's also come back that originally they were saying, oh, no, none of that data is going back to Apple. It's just getting stored locally. But now it looks like some of it, probably not all of it, but some of it is definitely going back to Apple. And they're keeping it. I mean, it's being logged on the phone. The local copy goes back years for people who've been moving their devices forward. Mine goes back to my original iPhone.
Right.
Ooh.
Well, iPhone 3G, I should say. It goes back to when I had it and when I took it to iOS 3. Whatever. I don't remember the exact date, but it goes back years.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, and they've been, if they've even done just, you know, some very basic location data back to, you know, their retailers or whatever, to just, or even just quality of service data,
That's what the original claim was that it was part of quality of service. It was part of knowing for like when they needed to jump towers. There is also another legitimate explanation for having this where it is on the phone. iPhone is based on OS X, and OS X is FreeBSD. It's a Unix, and a lot of Unix programs use static files or, you know, database files, but they just use files on the file system to communicate between processes. And a lot of there's been a lot of people making blog posts that this consolidated.db was actually for the multitasking, and that's, or at least that's why it got moved to a little more of an accessible location, was to support multitasking. And that actually makes perfect sense, that that's probably how the API is getting access to the location data.
Right.
I've heard some other fun rumors as well. You all know what the Skyhook service is?
No.
No? Okay. Skyhook is this idea that by looking at the Wi-Fi access points you can see, you can get kind of a geolocation. It's not quite as accurate as GPS, but the idea is, you know, you're looking at the MAC addresses of wireless access points, and the theory is that they just don't move around that much. So Apple was using Skyhook to assist location services. It looks at what Wi-Fi is available in the area, and that gives it a general idea. Then it, you know, narrows it in with GPS. But Skyhook is a very expensive service. So the theory I heard, and I heard this on Paul.com, was that they were using some of this location data, because that consolidated.db has the access points you've seen in it as well, that they were trying to build their own Wi-Fi-based geolocation services.
Which is what Google got popped for doing.
Yeah. So. Oh, well, Steve Jobs put out a statement. He goes, no, Apple's not doing anything, but Google is. And he immediately turned that on them.
Okay, well, one of the buses here, I've recently learned, has Wi-Fi, so that's not stationary.
Yeah. It's not a perfect system. I think the idea is that it's supposed to give you, like, a general idea, like, down to, I don't know, the city.
Yeah, but that's just a rounding error. That one bus is going to just get around. I mean, they're just going to say error and not count it. So
yeah. Although you could have a lot of fun with it if you know that that's what's going on. If you could get to an area, then clone, you know, get into and hack a whole bunch of wireless access points and change the MAC addresses and SIDs to match, like, an area of Kansas, like in the middle of New York.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
to fuck with people. I mean, it'd be hilarious.
That would be kind of nifty.
Or just pick up and move. I guess that's even easier. Set up a grid of Wi-Fi access points in a semi-public place, then pick it up and move it to a different city. So that, like, even all the signal strength is the same and stuff, right?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. And then just, and if you can do it in the same, actually, you know what, that would be kind of cool. SSID swapping. You just get people to randomly change their Wi-Fi routers or the wireless routers on a basis. Have a club like or something where you just sit there and go, okay, everybody switch to New York, everybody switch to Portland, everybody switch to and just replicate the data in the major city. That'd be kind of hilarious just to go do that.
Well, back to the iPhone security risk with this. So if the programs are actually using this, you can't just use a scrambler to get rid of the data as it goes in. But
well, no, you can. There have been people doing it. They figured out that they can, if you've jailbroken your phone, you can get on the console and actually make some link files and route all of this crap to dev null. But that breaks some things. It breaks applications that use it. Now, there's not that many using it at the moment. And what worries me is you're going to have a whole bunch of stuff using it here very shortly.
Yeah.
It's not even really Apple I'm worried about. It's the app writers who try to take advantage of it that I'm worried about.
Well, and here's the point is that, you know, with Android, you get asked every time you install an app, are you okay with this app doing this on your device? Do they do that on iOS?
No. It comes up once. Every time you run the program until you give it permission, and then you never see it again.
Okay.
So if you, like, a good example of this is, what was the game? There was a game I tried on my phone that wanted to use my location services, and I said no, and it asked me every time I ran the game.
Jesus.
And this game had absolutely nothing. It had no reason to need that. So I imagine all it was doing was wanting to do. I don't know, geotagged advertising or something. So I always said no and finally got fed up and turned the game off. You know, just took it off the phone. But, right. Yeah, every time you ran it, and it'll ask you until you accept it. And all you have to do is accept it once, and you never see the message again. Now, you can go into the phone and globally turn location services off, and that's supposed to stop the tracking.
We'll see.
I don't think it... they're saying in the they were doing tests against it, and it still writes stuff out to that database. It just keeps apps from hitting it.
Okay.
So, but that said, you know, I guess it depends. It's actually not that bad of a thing that you have a tracking device with you, if you think about it. Because it's a phone. It's not like it's surgically implanted in your arm.
Well, and exactly. And there's something to be said for being a boring, normal drone. Going to work, going to the grocery store, you know, going to the movie theater.
And when you're going to go to the strip joint, you leave the phone at home. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
And of course, now that you have this tool, all the more reason to give your kid a phone.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm in all seriousness, as much as I don't like the idea of, you know, any, I don't know, pick your favorite three-letter government agency or semi-quasi-government agency or private company that Apple happens to receive large amount of money from, being able to know where I am at any given point, but short of, well, I use a handle on the show, right? I don't say my real name. So it's not like they can listen to this show and have it, you know, it's like, we're going to track Morphs. It's like, well, maybe, but, you know, because we're calling attention to ourselves, but most people, they have no reason to single them out and track except for, you know, automated systems doing things like targeted advertising. But I don't think it's going to actually be like, you know, the black helicopter showing up and tracking you. And if you are worried about the black helicopters, don't get a smartphone. In fact, I've seriously thought about this with all the tracking stuff going on. It would probably be handy to go pick up one of the, the $20 Go phones, quick phones. Maybe, you know, pay for it in cash, put a fake name on it, and...
You can just buy a prepaid one without question.
Yeah, exactly. You just go get one of the prepaid phones and, you know, stick it in your pocket and make sure it's not a smartphone. It's just a... I'm hearing the plosives, aren't I?
No, you're doing fine.
Okay. Well, I'm hearing on my end, so I'm wondering if I'm, like, blowing out the microphone. I'm still learning how to use my microphone properly. I'm sorry.
So we were talking about getting a burner phone. I mean, you can even have a relatively feature phone, you know, something with good, a nice slider keyboard, and just get one of the GSM networks, because then you can pop the SIMs out and just change them. And actually, here's something else that you can do. You can get foreign SIMs and then just put them in there. You're paying a little bit more money, but then it looks like you're, you know, that might stand out, but, you know, just get your standard T-Mobile or AT&T in the USA.
Well, I was thinking, you know, if you're going someplace where you don't want to be tracked, but you need a phone, just get an alternative. Get you a crappy phone, put a fake name on it or something. If you even have to do that, get a burner phone, or just don't take your phone. You know, payphones still exist. There's plenty of other people with cell phones around. You can just say, hey, can I borrow your phone for a second? Most people will let you. Especially
if the other option using payphones is people steal the handles, the receivers.
That's true. Well, yeah. Okay. In all seriousness, social engineering fun time. It is super easy to say, you know, walk up to somebody and say, hey, man, I lost my phone. Can I borrow your cell phone for a second? I got to call my ride. And then just turn away from them so they can't hear what you're saying. Don't use the phone very long. You know, you don't want to run up the guy's minutes or anything. But I guarantee you.
I don't care what they're saying on my phone.
Well, I guarantee you, most people, if they think that, you know, it's like, hey, you know, if you have a semi-legitimate reason and you just, hey, I lost my phone. Oh, my God. I got to call somebody. Can I borrow your phone? They'll let you do it.
Right.
Especially if you're somewhat sincere and you're not, like, real creepy about it. Most people let you use your phone. Hell, I've let people use my phone. I mean, everybody does it. It's common courtesy.
And even if you aren't familiar with the area, you go into the bar and you have a couple of drinks, and then, you know, you're like, oh, shit, I lost my phone. You've had drinks with the people, and that is the ultimate you're one of us, because you had
a, Toasty!
Yeah. You know, oh, wow. We're like 25 minutes in, and that's the first sound effect I've played.
That's good.
I'm slacking here. I'm sorry.
It's a good sign.
It's a good sign.
Don't make us make it up an intervention banner.
Yeah.
We're having an intervention. We're taking Morp's soundboard away from him.
Yep. And so yeah, you know, that's you can definitely avoid using your smartphone, but you know, again, a lot of us like the features that we get with our smartphone and the date and the location services.
Well, sure, and but here's like okay. And if you're going to do something and you know you don't want to be tracked, like you're going to go break the law, leave your phone at home. I mean, it's pretty I mean, I don't mean that to sound the way it came out, but in any other instance, I actually don't mind the cops being able to find me because I haven't done anything I'm worried about, and it's like, oh, I've been in a horrible car accident and I happen to have a tracking device. All I got to do is hit the button and call for help. Yay! I mean,
exactly. And actually, you know, it's fun because the dumb people are going to still get caught because, what was it, California, they recently nabbed a couple of people. They were bank tellers. They did an inside job, but then they were bragging about it on Facebook. And how many times have we heard that story? You know?
Yes, the
it doesn't get much.
The Perfect Crime. I think it was the actual book. They caught those guys for that same murder.
Oh my God!
That's a classic, actually.
Oh, okay, I'm flat out right now. Everyone listening, it does not get more public than Facebook. I don't care what your privacy settings are. Facebook will let law enforcement have it, and I am sure at this point there are automated bots going through Facebook, just like people used to think Echelon was. There are automated programs going through the internet right now because it's super easy to do, looking for key phrases.
It's called Google.
Yeah.
Toasty!
So, well, hell, we had the other article I sent you guys that they can use IP addresses. Of course, anybody who's known about this, you know, for a while they've been able to use your network address to kind of pin down at least what city you're in, and now they're starting to get it down to, you know, general areas, neighborhoods. By I know there were some people using like known locations of servers and ping times, and I had the other article. Yeah, that was it. You know, congested routers and stuff like that, but. It was that Ars Technica article I sent you guys, or sent you, at least to you, Heavy. I don't know if you got it or not, Knox, but where they're saying they can track people and actually pin down their area fairly accurately using ping times and your IP address.
They could probably do it with just my IP address.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you do a reverse lookup or just, you know, hell, figure out what ISP owns it and call them. It's like, you know, I mean, it's probably not that hard to call an ISP and say, yep, this person's sharing kiddie porn. Give me their address. I mean, they'll do it.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's really what's going on. I hate to use that example. That's the extreme example. I really don't think law enforcement is calling and bullshitting about that kind of stuff just to... But, you know, might be a good reason to say...
Oh, heck, they probably don't even have to give a reason.
Well, is it Sprint? Somebody's got like a freaking automated online portal for law enforcement. I don't remember which one of the phone companies it is, but it's like, yeah, we'll tell you where they are. Here's the GPS. It's a nominal fee. I mean, they've all got their price list. So, I mean, just in general, if you're on the internet, you're being tracked. If you need to do something where you don't need to be tracked, then you need to go off the grid, and that is defined by leaving all of the, you know, all of your modern conveniences at home.
But exactly.
But here's the thing. Here it becomes an alibi, right? It's like, oh yeah, no, officer, I couldn't have been out there in the woods with that shovel burying that body. See, I was at home. You can even look up my cell phone records and see that.
And that's actually been used in courts. Guys like,
no, oh, has it?
I was downtown, and look, on my Facebook page, we've got 30 pictures of me with my buddies because somebody else has taken the pictures, and here's the timestamp. So I could not have been at that robbery.
Nice.
So, ooh. You know, and obviously, clearly, if the dude was in the pictures and you know, there were timestamps, you know, yes, you can fake that shit, but it's kind of hard. And if they actually went and got the records from the upload times, I think that's what they did. You can actually verify when that was put up. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
You know.
So, anyways, on that note, I think we'll wrap that topic up there. I've got our break music here. It's a Newborn, and it's NOOBORN, and that's by Funtastic Power. So we're going to play that for our break music. Let me just come over here and mute the Skype call so you all can continue doing whatever the hell it is you do, talking to each other, furiously masturbating, whatever. And I'll play your break music.
Thank you.
bring the Skype call back up here. There we go. You guys still there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. So tell me about your wonderful new toy that you're playing with.
Well, what I got my hands on is I've got two of them, so if I mess one up, it's handy to have to spare. Yeah. I got my hands on a couple of Teensy 2.0s. Now, what these things are is they're little breakout boards with an AVR microcontroller on it, and unfortunately, I can't read what micro is actually on the thing, but it's an Arduino, basically. But it's got a programmable USB interface. So the USB port on it can pretend to be other devices besides just a serial port like a traditional Arduino.
Which was the original hack that Palm used in order to get their phone to sync with iTunes back in the day.
Yeah, it pretended to be an iDevice, which is true. Yeah. But what this thing can do, and the thing I'm interested in, is it can pretend to be a USB HID human interface device. That's your keyboard.
Keyboard, mouse.
Keyboard, mouse, joystick, MIDI. It can pretend to be that. It can be a MIDI device. It can be a serial port. It can be all kinds of stuff. But the thing I'm interested in is having it pretend to be a keyboard. Now, I got the idea from Adrian Crenshaw, Iron Geek. He actually showed me when I met him a few years back, or a year and a half back, I should say. Almost 2 years, maybe. At a Metasploit class they were giving. And he showed me this device he was working on, which was based off of... it wasn't the Teensy 2. He had a different Teensy at the time, I think. But it was emulating a keyboard. And he's gotten a lot farther on it now than when I saw his device. But it's essentially... He gave a presentation at DEF CON on it. But you plug it up, and it's an automated keyboard. Now, what he was doing with it was fairly interesting. But it wasn't what I would do with it. How about that? But he was showing that, you know, the ability is there to do this crazy stuff, because he would hit a button on his device, and on the machine it was plugged up to, Notepad would run, or you'd see the command box run up, you know, Notepad would open, and it would start dumping like status of the sensors that he had wired up to it. He had a little photoresistor and a button and a few other things wired up to it. And these things are tiny, by the way. This thing's like an inch by half an inch.
Nice.
So you could embed this in stuff.
Now you could do a keystroke shortcut to basically pull up the command prompt in Windows, and then you're basically golden. So,
well, or any other operating system. I mean, what operating system doesn't support a standard issue USB keyboard, which is what it looks like?
Well, don't they sell Ghost Rider USB keys commercially?
They sell... I know he got the idea from a little device they sell in ThinkGeek, which is a USB pranker, which it pretends to be a USB keyboard in it. It randomly turns caps lock on and off and random characters and jiggles the mouse and shit like that. I think they do make... They're very expensive to get the professional ones. This thing's a microcontroller. They cost me about $15 a piece. No, they're more than that. $18 a piece, something like that. So I got two of them, and what I want to do with it, though, is I've got some ideas. What he was doing on his, which if you go to Iron Geek's website and look for the USB fuck library, P-U-H-D, or P-H-U-D, yeah, P-H-U-D, he calls them the USB fuck devices, and he's got a pretty good write-up and some demo videos of what he was doing with his. He was just using dip switches to switch between the modes, but I've got an idea on mine. He was mostly focusing on the idea of you'd trick somebody into plugging, you know, you'd like hide it in a USB toy or even make a USB toy out of it, because it's still a full Arduino, so it'll do stuff on its own, right? You have it move servos and shit. But he was messing with the idea that you would somehow get this surreptitiously, I can talk, yay, attached to a victim computer, and then it would use the photoresistor to figure out when they turned off the lights, like when they left for the day, and then start doing stuff on their computer by automatically issuing keyboard commands, which, unlike USB drives and flash drives and CD drives, your USB doesn't care if auto run is enabled or not, your keyboard. You don't need an administrative password to hook up a keyboard. Right?
Right.
So how
otherwise, that'd be very hard to type in.
Well, yeah, but here's the trick of it. You can, because it's, you know, it's fully programmable. You can program what it's going to shove into the console. He was just dumping stuff out to Notepad to demo it. But Dave Kennedy on the Social Engineering Toolkit has actually got some pre-made programs for pulling down, say, an HTTP payload and running it. Like pulling up a website, pulling down the executable, and running it.
So instant own the box.
Yeah. Now,
So how does this work in a situation where the device doesn't have net access? So what would you do in that situation?
Well, if it doesn't have net access, why are you interested in pwning it?
Theoretically, could it use this keyboard functionality to give itself USB drive permission?
Yes, it can. In fact, you can get an expansion board for these things that has an SD card slot on it, and it can be a keyboard and mount that as a USB drive when it gets the appropriate order. So if you write your program with your photoresistor to wait, you know, like let's say you made a mouse with a USB hub in it, and you got the little expansion card. Because this is actually totally Iron Geek's example, by the way. If you go on his website, he's got a mouse he put together, and the idea of it was, well, I customized it. See, it's got the little RGB light in there going and cycling through colors, which is cool and all. But and then the idea would be that your victim would take this mouse that he modified to look cool and use it and leave it plugged in. And then when the lights went out, like the person went home for the day, it would activate because the photoresistor would, you know, tell it, oh, the lights went out. Or you could,
dude,
you could put it on a timer. But
you would commercialize their mice in the dark.
One at a time, guys. I couldn't understand what you said.
Good, Knox.
People use their mice in the dark.
True.
And their hand kind of blocks light.
But how many cube space workers do you know get to work in the dark?
Exactly. So I was going to say, you know, it would be really easy to just mass produce these things and sell them as like super ergonomic mice. You just go through and
or anything, you know, the USB humping dog, you know, whatever. But right. What I want to do is I'm not so much interested in leaving the device somewhere because, you know, yeah, $20, if you're doing a pen test, that's not that much to lose if you need to leave a device somewhere, especially if you're getting data that's worth thousands, right? But you know, for me, because I'm not actually an evil bad guy, as much as it would be fun, damn morals. Yep. Shit. Anyways, I'm not interested in leaving my device behind, but I am interested in some of the other ideas. For example, because you can have it hammer out a password, right? It would not be difficult just to make really complex passwords for, like, your email. You know, stuff that you're not going to remember. You can't type it in. You know, these gnarly, horrible passwords. Nobody's ever going to brute force, and the only way to get it is a keylogger.
Yeah, the 200-character random string.
Exactly. And you have the device, just save it, and you can make it so it hammers it out when you hit, say, a button on it. Or what I'm going to do with mine, this is the plan anyways, is I've got my hands on a couple of old NES controllers. And I've got an LCD screen coming, so I'm going to write a menu system so I can run more than one program. And even, like with the attack programs, maybe even go through and change like what IP address is from so I don't have to reprogram the device every time I want to use it. Because I envision using mine with the idea of, like, say, walking around a conference or an office or something and just jacking machines, waiting for the little light to go off and then hitting a button. Like, 10 seconds flat, I pwn you. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's like, what? Yeah. Building a botnet? What?
Well, that's possible. Yeah, and then, like you said, use a selectable. I don't know. You take something that's pretty low-key, you know, small, and then basically you've sized it up now. So, I don't know. But you're right. Nobody looks at the back of their machine. So if you're just, like, standing there, like, looking over them, you know, or standing around the group of people while you're watching a dude play a game or whatever, yeah, maybe.
Well, with mine, because I need to be able to show it off in a white hat sense, and I want it to look neat, so I'm going to embed it in an NES controller.
Okay.
Also, too, I can always reprogram it and use the NES controller just as a USB gamepad on my system. have it kick itself over into game mode, right? Actually, that wouldn't be a You see, that's the other idea, is by making it have legitimate uses, nobody questions it. It's like, oh yeah, no, look, check out my little NES controller. I made it for playing emulators. Here, check it out. I'll play it on your machine. You know, then you punch in your secret code, up, up, down, down, left, right, B, A, start, and, you know, it runs Meterpreter. So that's the idea anyways, but I was also thinking you could put, like, okay, like I was talking about, like the idea of putting my password in the thing. Well, the, you know, I've just announced to the internet that my NES controller will have my passwords in it. Well, you'll have to know the secret button press to get it to release the passwords, and I guarantee that one will not be the Konami code.
Yeah.
So, you know, you make your own Street Fighter style combos there, and you can have it do different things. And that's, I mean, that's kind of stuff's just fun. You know what I mean? Am I getting overly excited over what is a fairly simple concept here? Because I'm thinking this is just going to be fun when I get it done.
Oh, fun!
Sure, absolutely. And I'd you know, definitely need some video and
oh yeah, I'm going to have to do a full write up. We'll post it up on Morps Tech. The problem is, I actually have everything I need except the LCD screen. I had an LCD screen I thought I could use. It's a 4x20. Or not 4x20, 4x16 LCD screen, you know, HD parallel port LCD screen. It takes like 11 pins off the micro to run it, but the thing has 21, and that, and how many buttons does an NES controller have? 8. So yeah, yep. I mean, I'm plenty of pins on the device, but it's too big. I had to go online and order a smaller LCD screen because the one I had is larger, at least vertically, than the controller itself. I looked at the circuit board. There's no way to trim it down.
Okay.
So that's, I've got to wait on parts, but I'm going to start working on it anyways. I think we're going to have some fun with this thing.
It should be cool. You know, and that's definitely, it'll be interesting to see what you do as far as, you know, set up and actually run your own pen testing on your own machines, you know, different types of boxes, you know, Unix and a Mac and a PC.
Well,
know,
that's why I want the screen on it, right? Because what Iron Geek was doing with his is he's got DIP switches. And if you watch the video on his website during his DEF CON presentation, he has to keep going back and referring to his notes because he can't remember what setting is what on his device. So that's why I want the screen, so I can just look at it and you know, see what mode I'm in.
Exactly. Yeah, that'll be handy.
Now, I might be overestimating the amount you can get onto one of these little chips. I know they don't actually have that much space, but, you know, keyboard commands are small. The kind of coding it would take to make, you know, 8 buttons work as... Well, hell, I wouldn't even really have it act as a joystick. I'd leave it in keyboard mode for that. I would just make the buttons, you know, up, down, left, right, maybe, what, ZX and C or something like that for playing Flash games.
You can always get the expander board, and then, because since you're putting it into a larger device anyway, and just put the SD card, then you have all the memory, you know, you need for.
I'm definitely gonna make a function for changing things around. There's no reason I couldn't make a menu for just, you know, mapping the keys to keyboard buttons.
There you go.
So.
Yeah, that would actually work pretty good.
And then I've got an excuse to carry it, right? Oh no, it's a game controller.
Exactly.
Yeah, as long as nobody does the Hadouken and accidentally enters your credit card information into Street Fighter, you're good.
Yeah, that's all I need. It's like, wait, what's it doing? Oh, it's opening your email. That's interesting. So,
no, you could do that if you had the right combination of button presses that, you know, didn't correspond with any of the games that you were demonstrating the controller for.
Oh, sure. No, I mean, how easy would it be to have it, you know, pull up the Windows run box, run Chrome for gmail.com, and then start doing the appropriate number of No, because Gmail and most of the Google sites are pretty good about moving your cursor to the login box. So hammer out your name, tab, hammer out your password, tab, enter, and it's in your email from doing the Hadouken.
Ooh. Yeah, that'd be kind of nifty. And also how many people actually save their login information and let their web browser remember it.
That is actually something Iron Geek talks about. Is that's it's a pseudo cross-site scripting. Well, cross-computer scripting, anyways, because you know they're logged into their system all the time. You walk in, jack their system, hit a button, and you know you've got total ownage of their box. I mean, this is the kind of device they show in the hacker movies where some you know like what am I thinking? Like Terminator 2, where he pulls out the circuit board. You know, palm computer and starts getting into the ATM, right?
Yeah.
This is totally on the level with that, and it's real. So I'm definitely going to have to do some videos or get the ad agent will want to do the videos.
Yep.
Tell him to build his own fucking device. Anyways.
But I'm sitting, because I understand how these things work and how easy it is to basically penetrate a system, even though it's convenient and I'm in my own house, you know, I'm the only one that has access to my hardware, I'm not having any of these websites remember a damn thing. You know, it
goes back to the iPhone thing. What if you get a piece of malware in your machine? What if you get a virus and something, say, starts dumping your password databases? Or now they're going to be looking for that, you know, your iPhone. They're going to be looking for the iTunes backup of your phone so they can dump that off and send it off and get all your info. You know,
if you make the agent build his own device, you know he's just going to take yours and put a sticker of his mask on it.
Yeah, he is. That is what he does.
It happens. But it should be interesting.
I'm still trying to get that damn... the laptop I loaned him to do the show, he stuck a giant agent face sticker on it. I'm still trying to get that thing off. Get some Google on or something.
You know, you should take the two-part epoxy away from him next time so he doesn't do that.
Well, I didn't know he had it.
Yeah, you know, that happens. Now you got to take the chisel.
So, you know what? You can just keep it. I'll get another one.
Exactly. No, I like this project. It seems cool. There's a lot of other uses for this, too. I mean, obviously, if you don't want to leave it behind. But think about your public library and how many people use a machine at the public library. And do they really worry about you sticking a USB drive into the public library machine? You know,
I wonder too, the way the USB bus works, it's a lot like an old school network hub. One USB device usually can see everything going on the bus, right?
Right.
So I'm wondering how hard would it be to turn one of these devices into a small scale keylogger? And you might need like an SD card or something for storage because there's not that much room on these chips. And I think it would probably lose everything the moment it lost power anyways. So,
but think about it this way. Maybe you don't have to you just use it to install the keylogger and then come back and pick up the data later. Or have
send the data off to you. Well, here's a thought. You know, another thing. They make XBs that are specifically for hooking up to Arduinos, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what this thing is, or at least it runs the Arduino environment. You know what? Heavy, I'm going to throw an idea at you. I want you to elaborate on it while I go get the URL for the website where I ordered these things, so I do want to give it out.
Okay.
But what about hooking up XBs? Because you can get a little USB adapter for an XB and then put an XB on the thing, and the range on those things is pretty good. I think you can get XBs that'll do a couple of miles.
Yeah, I like that idea, and I mean, it gives you again. People, keep in mind, as a person who's clean for a living, nobody looks at the back of their machine, especially when it's on the floor and it's shoved up under their desk. And there's usually a couple of USB slots there, so something like that, provided the building isn't made out of too much concrete, you're going to get pretty decent range, and then you can go back to word driving and basically just have it transmit, at intervals too. You could program the timing on it, and you could definitely throw out, say, you know, program between 4 and 6 in the morning, and then you're just going to be able to go and pick up. Your data as it transmits it out, you know, your key logger or along the lines of maybe even password.
Well, I'm not sure you would transmit it back over the teensy. You'd have to send it out via some other method because your stuff, you don't transmit data back to the keyboard.
Yeah, I mess around with my USB hubs enough that I just have the back of the computer facing me all the time anyways.
Okay, I've got the website here. I ordered these things, and this is the site that makes them. I haven't seen anybody else carrying them. It's from pjrc.com/TEENSY.
Okay.
So we'll give him a plug here because these are pretty cool little devices, and he's got a nice documents section on it showing how to make MIDI devices out of them, showing them how to make. It's pretty funny. He's got a whole bunch of different projects linked of people who've made stuff with him, including the fuck devices. But he interestingly doesn't put the name on there. He just puts security device or something on there. I guess he didn't want to put fuck on his website. It's fuck. It's not fuck. P-H-U-K. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it stands for, but it isn't an acronym.
The way those Linux and acronyms go, that's what it stands for.
Yeah. I was going to say, since you have keyboard access, but then you want to go ahead and give yourself root or give yourself a USB controller access for a USB drive, again, you're right. Do you really want it to transmit back? But you could. I mean, you could definitely turn it into a USB device, give it permission, and then it just streaming data out over.
Oh, you mean have it reprogram itself on the fly and change over to the thumb drive and just... Ooh, now that is a thought. Could you take something like this, tell it it's going to be a USB storage device, don't actually put any storage on the device, put an XB or some other radio on it, and then make a receiver somewhere else that's, say, you know, your laptop. So it switches from being a keyboard to suddenly being, you know, a long-distance USB drive link. God, it would be slow. Oh, that would be slow.
Well, but if you're planning on this, then... you're right. It would be very, very.
You probably have to leave it there overnight, anyways.
But you're not getting anything that's really high data or density either. You're only going to get username, password, a little bit. Basically,
no. I don't think you've ever actually ran a keyboard logger on somebody's machine before, have you?
No.
Yeah, you don't just get username and password. You get everything they pound on the keyboard.
Well, okay, but, I mean, how much data are you actually going to get?
Well, it depends. Did you get somebody who was writing their doctoral thesis?
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, it's not just... It's the complete contents of everything they punch into their keyboard, unless you have a smarter keylogger, which is not really a keylogger at that point. It's just malware.
Okay.
But, most keyloggers, that's why they send them back via some other channel, or you go and retrieve the device and get them. Because usually you leave them running for days, and then you have to kind of grep through and figure out what's what, because you get no context either. Most keyloggers, they won't... I guess it depends on the keylogger.
Well, if you know their usernames, at least, you can just look at everything after that.
Sure. And it's usually... Okay, it's usually pretty easy, but you still actually have to go through the text file, and you would be amazed at the amount of garbage from where, I don't know, somebody's got their cat walking on it, they're taking naps on the keyboard or whatever, so I mean... But, I mean, I've got a ton of ideas for this thing, because it's reprogrammable. We're going to see what I can do with it.
Okay. I'm actually seeing one that Trojan mouse and USB hub and micro SD.
Yeah, that's the mouse I was telling you about.
And then when you scroll the lock, it delivers the payload, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he had some fun with it. Because that is something that the three LED lights, your scroll lock, num lock, cap lock, those all get transmitted. He has an idea on his website too, which I really like, which was it turns caps lock on, and then when it sees caps lock go off, it knows someone is actually sitting at the device.
Yep.
Or sitting at the computer. So I thought
is trying to retype their password.
Well, but that's the thing, is nobody thinks twice, oh damn, I hit the caps lock key again.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, we're about out of time here, so we're gonna close out with Cyberpunk from Patient Zero, and we'll be back on Thursday.